Let's turn to Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem. Secretary Noem, thank you for joining us. Have you learned anything about the motivations of this shooter? Why did he do this? Why did he drive across the country and carry out this brazen attack in Washington?
Well, the investigation is still ongoing, and we're allowing our partnership with the FBI and DOJ to continue to reveal all of the sources of motivation. But we do believe this individual, when they came into the country, we know he was unvetted. He was brought into the country by the Biden administration through Operation Allies Welcome, and then maybe vetted after that, but not done well based on what the guidelines were put forward by President Biden. And now, since he's been here, we believe he could have been radicalized in his home community and in his home state. So,
well, that's kind of shocking, to be honest with you. Very upsetting to me, because I began my knowledge of radical Islam right after 9/11 when I went to Washington, D.C. And every terrorist attack after that, whether it was, they always said it's a lone wolf and he's become radicalized. Or they would say he's depressed about his home life, or he has a mental problem. This is what the press always used to say. And I remember the time that the shooter tried to kill Republicans while they were playing baseball in a baseball field in Alexandria, which was like a stone's throw from where I was living. He practically killed Steve Scalise and tried to kill several of the others. And we know he said to someone in the parking lot before he went in there, "Are these Republicans? Are those Republicans that are, you know, practicing?" So we know about this guy. We know what he was trying to do. He was trying to kill them. And yet, I was sitting in my living room with my FBI husband, who was active at the time in the Bureau, as we heard the FBI spokesperson say, you know, he was having trouble at home. He was just having depressed and going through a hard time. This is what the official word was for so long by the FBI, by Barack Obama's FBI, and, of course, by Biden's FBI. And there's a reason for that, because other than, you know, the unwillingness to face what's really happening, but also because the actual experts on Islam were purged from the FBI. And right after 9/11, under Barack Obama, when George Bush left and Obama won, they purged all the training manuals from the FBI at Quantico. So FBI agents know nothing about Islam other than the nicest, friendliest things. Same thing with the Pentagon, and same thing with police. So there's a reason why suddenly we're stupid again. I just have to tell you. But that's very upsetting to me, to be coming from Kristi Noem. And I want to talk about that today in part. And, of course, we're going to be talking about a lot of other things as well. But first, it's Christmas time. It really is. And when Mary said, "Let it be done to me according to your word," she embraced God's plan. Even with uncertainty, risk, and sacrifice, her yes brought Jesus, the Savior and source of life, into the world. Today, countless moms face that same moment of decision when they see their baby on ultrasound. They're scared and they're unsure. Their moment to say yes could pass, but you could make a difference in that answer right now. Because of the generosity of listeners like you, Preborn Network Clinics can provide immediate support, maternity clothes, diapers, counseling, and so much more, helping thousands of mothers to embrace life. Over 380,000 babies have been rescued through Preborn, yet thousands more are denied the chance to live each day. This holiday season, this Christmas season, don't let another life be lost. Be the hope for hurting mothers and at-risk babies. Just say yes to life today. To donate, all you have to do is go to preborn.com/Sandy. $28 provides one ultrasound and one chance for one mom to see her baby in utero. It's just amazing the effect it has on these moms. And, of course, if you can, it's the end of the year, if you have more money to give, they can always use that. They provide so many more things. You know, they provide provision, supplies, they provide counseling. They certainly do Christian counseling, trying to tell mothers, you know, about the whole plan of salvation and the plan, that there is an order, there is a God. And so that's part of what they do. If you would like to give more generously at this Christmas time, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, Art, sit back, and this isn't a relaxing conversation, but I'm going to bring to you the best I can some perspective on what's happening right now with Islam in this country on this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
There is some positive news about Staff Sergeant Andrew Wolf, the West Virginia National Guardsman who survived an ambush attack in Washington, D.C. last Wednesday. Governor Patrick Morrissey said Wolf, still fighting for his life, gave a thumbs up when asked if he could hear a nurse and was able to wiggle his toes.
Funeral arrangements for Specialist Sarah Beckstrom, who was fatally wounded in the attack, are pending. A suspect has been charged with her murder. Nicole Skanga now on what we've learned about him.
CBS News has learned new details about the 29-year-old suspect, still in critical condition tonight and under guard in a Washington hospital. Rachnamala Lakhanwal's former caseworker told us that his mental condition deteriorated in recent months, saying he was isolated, suffering manic episodes, and rarely spoke to his wife or children. The FBI is now interviewing friends and family in Washington State and in San Diego, scrubbing through his social media accounts, looking for clues as to why the suspect allegedly drove 2,800 miles to Washington, D.C. to carry out last week's attack.
We believe he could have been radicalized in his home community and in his home state.
But U.S. intelligence officials tell CBS News so far there have been no confirmed links to any terrorist networks.
When you come from Afghanistan and you are Muslim, you know all about terror. After all, he yelled Allahu Akbar when he shot those two National Guardsmen. And if you didn't hear the details of this, Rahmanullah came up on these two young people. And as I understand it, Sarah Bergstrom had just sworn her oath of office like the day before. She's, what, 23, something like that. The background on her is that she was a very strong Christian. Her dad tweeted when she died, Sarah is going to die in a minute. I'm holding her hand. The wound is so serious, but she'll soon be in glory. That's what the dad said about Sarah. Andrew Wolf, also from West Virginia, is still clinging to life. You heard that report, and there's some signs he's comprehending, and that's got to be good. We don't know the extent of his injuries, but this is what I remember. Rahmanullah actually took his gun and shot Sarah point blank in the head. He did the same thing with Andrew Wolf. And then a third National Guardsman who had a knife, not a gun, came over and stabbed repeatedly Rahmanullah. Okay, and then a fourth National Guardsman had a gun and came and shot him. Now, I don't know why, but if you saw the pictures of Rahmanullah being a Lakhanwal, being loaded on an ambulance, he was practically naked, if not naked. He did not look like he'd been injured. It didn't look, maybe it was in his back, I don't know, but whatever happened, all those knife wounds and shooting didn't seem to take his life out, that's for sure. And he didn't seem to be in very serious condition. But that's just on the street, these young people who just got there, fresh-faced, if you've seen Sarah Beckstrom's photo and Andrew Wolf's as well, these are just kids, American kids, that wanted to serve their country. Sarah, actually, it was on Thanksgiving Day, and she volunteered to serve because a lot of her fellow guardsmen had family nearby, and she didn't. And so she volunteered to serve. So that's the kind of people we're talking about. You know, murder is murder, no matter how wonderful the object is, but I just thought those are things that we should know. So he yells, Ramanullah yells, Allahu Akbar, when he does this shooting. And then yet, we wonder about the motive. We wonder about the motive. Was he radicalized here? You mean he didn't know about Islam and about jihad? He never heard of that in Afghanistan? Please, this kind of naivety, it drives me crazy. But our government really is operating in a very naive way right now. We're dealing with Qatar, which is the world's largest sponsor of terrorism. Oh, yes, we do business with them. But when Hamas did their attack on Israel on October the 7th, guess where all the leaders of Hamas went? They went to Qatar. They stayed in luxury hotels for months, weeks, at the expense of the government, living life in luxury in these suits. And so that's who we somehow think is our friend. And the thinking is so muddled, I have to tell you, I'm very concerned about this. But I'm not going to spend my time talking about that because I'm praying that somehow somebody actually knows what's really happening and they're sort of doing a thing I don't quite understand. But here's the thing. Ramanullah came over under the Biden administration. Do you remember when that we left Afghanistan so quickly? Several of our Marines, I think six of them, were killed because someone, a suicide bomber, came near them. And the whole thing was just sickening if you watched any of it. And one of our planes was trying to take off, and there were, I believe, probably you could say hundreds of Afghans trying to get on the plane, clinging to the plane. And then later we saw pictures of more than hundreds in the belly of a plane, not in seats, but like just all over the place, just crammed in there like sardines. And the Biden administration, of course, insisted that they had vetted these people. But I'm just reading kind of a synopsis by a national security person, and this is what they say. It's about the Inspector General report. He said the report says the feds failed to screen or vet large numbers of Afghan national fighters. In the wake of the Washington, D.C. targeted assassination of National Guard troops by an Afghan refugee living in Washington State, might I just interject, he was in Washington State. Washington State, you think he might have found some National Guardsmen to shoot out there? Why did he drive across country to be in D.C.? I'm thinking, my mind is thinking, well, you know, President Trump had sent troops in there, and Washington, D.C. was very peaceful. And Washington, D.C. also, if you get if you kill somebody in the courtroom or the justice system, so-called justice in D.C., well, you can kind of get justice. You know, criminals are going free. So maybe those things, I don't know, played into his decision to drive across the country to D.C. in order to murder a National Guardsman, because he could have done it closer to home. It would have been much more convenient. All right, so this comment from the national security person I'm mentioning, it is a comment on the official 2022 Department of Homeland Security's Office of Inspector General report on the Biden administration's, quote, Operation Allies Welcome. That was their big move, this thing they were so proud of. Former Afghani fighter Ramanullah Lakhanwal on November 23rd shouted Allahu Akbar before firing as he murdered National Guard soldier Sarah Beckstrom, age 20, and severely wounded Staff Sergeant Andrew Wolf, 24, in downtown Washington, D.C. Lakhanwal, now there's a lot of talk about this, so I want to read this carefully. Lakhanwal fought with U.S. forces and with the Central Intelligence Agency for a decade. Now this is in Afghanistan. Was Lakhanwal a sleeper cell who infiltrated into the United States under Biden administration's ill-prepared refugee program? Or did he become radicalized after he entered the U.S.? So the report of the Inspector General says, quote, the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, encountered obstacles to screen, vet, and inspect all evacuees during the recent Afghan crisis. The link, they say, under Operation Allies Welcome, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection, a part of DHS, were overwhelmed and allowed about 76,000 Afghan refugees to enter the U.S. On that fateful day that we all watched. And hardly any of them were vetted. That was just a lie. In fact, I saw Secretary Mayorkas in a Senate hearing, not a confirmation, but a hearing on this mess, and he had to admit that they didn't. They kept asking questions. It was Josh Hawley. And he finally had to admit that they really, there was nothing else for him to say. They couldn't personally vet all of these people. And my understanding is, actually, we have brought in something like 200,000 now Afghan refugees since 2021. Now, I want to read this other part. We wonder about what Ramanullah was doing with our CIA and other forces. This is a Substack piece, I think, by Sam Faddis. I'm not sure. But it says, the man who shot the two National Guard members was part of a zero unit that worked with the CIA. CBS reports that those units were known as death squads by human rights groups because of their brutality and alleged penchant for killing civilians. Almost 10,000, are you ready? Almost 10,000 foreign death squad members have been resettled in the United States since 2021. Of course, I'm sure they weren't all radicalized. They were peaceful Muslims, right? They were just working with us on the death squads, but they were peaceful. They knew nothing about jihad. They had to come to the United States to learn about jihad. That's what they would have us think, and it's absolutely ridiculous. I can't believe Christy said that. It's very disappointing, but I'm guessing that she just doesn't know, because how would she know? I know for a reason, and I'll tell you the reason. I went to Washington, D.C. for the first time right after 9/11. You've heard me say many times I was in North Korea on 9/11, knowing that I was moving, uprooting myself from Chicago, leaving my kids, my everyone, to go to be the president of Concerned Women for America. And as I watched those towers and the people jumping from the towers from North Korea, I wondered if there would be a war and if I would ever get back to the United States and see my kids. And if I did, if there would even be a Concerned Women for America to be president of. So it was under those conditions, it's like 2 weeks after 9/11, that I came to D.C. The Pentagon was still smoking, and my office, from my balcony, I could see the White House. So that's how close to situation I was physically. So I had a visitor come in to talk to me. His name was Frank Gaffney. He was the founder and president of the Center for Security Policy, and Frank asked me if he could brief me on some things. And so we went into my conference room, and boy, did he ever. I would say that that was the beginning of an awakening for me. I knew nothing about Islam, nothing. We had worked with Islam a little bit as an NGO, but I really didn't know really much except the most broad sweeping things, that their God was Allah. They're pro-life. That's why we worked with them on some things at the UN, the NGOs. But I didn't really know what they taught. So this was an eye-opener for me. So Frank proceeded to tell me quite the story. So I sat at our table with Frank. Now, I'd only known Frank through radio interviews back from Chicago. I didn't know him personally. So he began to brief me. So this is what happened. And I don't think many people can tell you this story, so I'm going to tell you. On 9/11... there were a group of Muslim Brotherhood operatives who had an appointment in the White House with George Bush. So needless to say, that morning, they were not able to finish that meeting. They weren't able to go to the White House on that morning. And so Grover Norquist of Americans for Tax Reform was their host. And Grover took them to a conference room in a building where Frank Gaffney's Center for Security Policy was also housed. So seeing all these robed guys come in with their, the head covering, and not the face, but the head, was very interesting to the staff at CSP. And so they managed, because the wall was not that thin, to listen to the conversation. And while they were listening, they heard these Muslim Brotherhood leaders craft a response to what was happening. Part of it was the Islamophobia approach to stop people from criticizing, how to stop this because they knew there'd be a huge backlash. They had it all laid out. It was brilliant. And so you may recall that when George W. Bush finally spoke about in response to 9/11, not in the bullhorn, but I mean later in the White House when, we were at a point where we could actually listen. And he said, Islam is a peaceful religion. And he warned us not to be mad, not to respond as you might if a group of people attacked your country and killed 3,000 of your citizens. Don't behave that way, because Islam is a very peaceful religion. And so we must, you know, tap it down. Let's not be those kinds of people. Just, you know, I don't know what you're supposed to do with those emotions. I try to do that with soldiers at war. You help them to understand who the enemy is. But we weren't allowed to do that. We weren't allowed to say they were the enemy. There was some natural response to that, but trust me, it was shot down very, very quickly. So a few days later, maybe a week later, I'm not sure how, I think it was the same Muslim Brotherhood leaders. I'm not sure about that, but I believe it was, found themselves in the White House. And a few days, a week maybe, after 9/11, we see President Bush visiting with all these Muslim Brotherhood leaders in one of those rooms with their long robes. And it was so weird and so disturbing, even before I understood what was happening. So why would they do that? Well, because the Republicans were trying to expand their voter base. They knew that the Democrats had Jewish voters, American Jewish voters. It was a strong base of support for them, for finances and every other way. And so Karl Rove, who was the architect, as you recall, decided that there was an untapped people group, and that was the Muslims. There were millions of Muslim Americans, and maybe they could be our group. And so that was the reason for bringing them into the White House initially, was to, you know, make friends, play footsie with them, and bring them into the Republican camp. Now, in defense of Karl Rove and George W. Bush, I don't think they had a clue. I don't think they had any more clue about what Islam was about Sharia, about Dawah, about all the things that we know now, Taqiyya. I don't think they had a clue about any of that. They just took Muslims at face value because they're very polite. That's part of their culture. And so this is how it all started. And I can tell you firsthand that I was doing a lot of television then, and it was probably January after the attack on 9/11 when I was on Crossfire. And the topic was, how can we make sure that our children are not turned against Islam in school? It has to be textbooks. It has to be wording. We have to introduce Islamophobia, all of that. And they were rushing to do that. In fact, I think some of it was already in print. So I was the conservative host who wasn't crazy about that idea. And the other person was a Muslim. I don't even remember who it was. And I was on with James Carville and Tucker Carlson. So, you know, they had this is when Crossfire was live at Washington University, with a huge audience, and it was probably the number one news show in the country because it was terrific. The way they did it was terrific. We had a conservative host and a liberal host, and you had a conservative guest and a liberal guest. So you had two and two. And then you also had a screen. So when it was my turn to speak, James Carville called attention to the big screen behind me. And it wasn't a guest this time. It was a quote from Franklin Graham. And it said, in part, Islam is a wicked and evil religion. And that was just part of the quote. And so James Carville, excuse me, I'm going to imitate a little bit. He looked at me. Is that what your friend Franklin Graham says? Do you agree with him? And I said, yes, I do. Well, James jumped up from his seat and started screaming. He started saying, GD, cursing, foul. This is live television. It's amazing. And I noticed that he was kind of salivating. And so I just picked up my cup and stood up and handed it to him. And I just said, James, you're dripping. You're drooling. And then he really exploded, just absolutely exploded. And this is an aside. This is not part of the story, but he was just crazy. He just got turned crazy over this. And what did he know about Islam at that time? Probably not very little, but not very much. But nevertheless, he was sure he was right about that. And so, actually, that Rush Limbaugh picked that up, and the next day I went to the office. Everybody, he called me the CWA babe, and that was a moment in my life. But I'm trying to explain to you how it started. So I got very seriously involved with Frank, in trying to inform. I did a ton of interviews about this. I wrote about it. I ended up being labeled that one of the 10 women against Islam with Jeanine Pirro and Laura Ingraham and Ann Coulter, and I can't even remember who else, but and they did a sketch of our faces and gave our geographic area. They didn't tell what town, but they said where we were. And I was being in D.C. at the time, and we lived in a high-rise, and we were pretty sure we had one jihadi in the building with us. Bruce was out of the FBI by this time. So I honestly knew it was a threat on my life, and I had to be careful. I wasn't afraid. I didn't walk in fear, but I knew that this was a serious attempt to kind of expose us. So that's kind of, I wanted to give you an idea of how involved I became. So I joined a group, a private group. Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin was the head of this, and it was like a way to fight back. And lots of us were very active in this. So the interesting thing is we are encountering the same things, like Christy Noem saying, oh, we don't know why. You know, maybe he got radicalized when he came here. We were hearing the same things then. And there was plenty of information to show that that was not true. In fact, I'll just mention one thing. I've got the booklet over here, but I think I can remember. It's called the Exploratory Memorandum, and it was written by the Muslim Brotherhood. Bruce was the, I'm not even sure the exact title. He was an attorney in the Chicago office of the FBI before I ever met him, before a 9/11 happened. And some of you might have heard about the Holy Foundation trial. The Holy Foundation, that was out of Chicago. And Bruce was the agent, the attorney in charge on the day that the Holy Land Foundation was a group of Islamists in, I believe, the northern suburbs. And they got a tip, the FBI got a tip that they were destroying all kinds of papers that were very incriminating to them. So the FBI, Bruce is the one who called for a raid. And so the FBI headed there. But while that happened, somebody leaked to the press that the FBI was coming. And so that's when they actually started shredding those documents. So that was Bruce's link to this very long, horrific story for our country. So fast forward to me with Frank Gaffney, and we have this booklet called The Exploratory Memorandum. Now, this is actually because of the Holy Foundation case, and at that time, the FBI knew all about the Islam. They knew all about what was happening. They had experts, whereas some of us, the average person, didn't know anything. They knew everything. They were watching this. They knew because we'd had terrorist bombings, we'd had planes come down. We had enough of a history with this that some people were experts, and they were. So the Holy Land Foundation trial was an expose of what the Muslim Brotherhood was doing in this country then. What they were doing then, this is back 20-plus years ago. And so in this exploratory memorandum, it talks about how they plan to infiltrate everything and to take over. And the phrase that I remember from that memorandum that I'll never forget was, and we will destroy their miserable house from within. We will destroy their miserable house from within. It also linked every Muslim Brotherhood-supported organization in the country. It was like, I might get their names wrong because I'm doing it from memory, but it was the university one. It was the higher education one. It was the Muslims for this, Muslims for that, things that you would probably recognize. And, of course, one of them was CARE, Council for American Islamic Relations. CARE was the PR arm of the Muslim Brotherhood. And right away after 9/11, news outlets discovered that, and they banned them for their airwaves, banned them. But now they're back. Now they're back. They've been back for a long time. Council on American Islamic Relations, because they just are, they present themselves very well. They have suits on. They're very well-spoken, and they are as wicked as the day is long. They are jihadists in suits. That's just what they are. So that's where we were on that. And it was just, it's been very painful, honestly, to see us go backwards. Of course, we started going backwards with Barack Obama, and then it carried on with Joe Biden. And we don't want to see the Trump administration repeat those dangerous, deadly mistakes on their view of Islam. One of the things that they do, Hijra is the name for it. It's jihad by immigration. It's a fundamental tenet of Islam, hearkening back to the earliest days of Muhammad's war to establish hegemony over the cities of Southwest Arabia. The first hijra was the flight of Muhammad from Mecca to the largely Jewish city of Yathrib, now the completely Muslim city of Medina. So in other words, they completed their object to take over that Jewish city, and now that happens to be Medina. Now, you don't think that's just happening then, because I want to play something for you. This is, I think, three different American imams kind of explaining some things never change with Islam. Clip two.
Why am I migrating here? Why am I in America? The Prophet ﷺ's companions left Mecca to go to a land that had no Muslims. We are in this country purely for the sake of Allah. The moment you make this intention, you will look at things different. People will meet you different. How could it be that your co-workers know you as a Muslim for 10 years, not once you presented Islam to them? You don't know why your purpose is here. All you guys together, we are in this country for Allah.
As we're here and living in the U.S., what is our role now? What is the way forward? Let me just quote for you an ayah of the Quran, and I'm going to try to encapsulate it. Allah is saying, do not obey the disbelievers. Don't yield to them. And then he gives us the process of what to do next. وَجَاهِدْهُمْ بِهِ جِهَادًا كَبِيرًا. And so make jihad against them.
What is your duty as a member of the Ummah now that you are also an American? It is our physical jihad duty to fight the entire earth until we enter it into the Ummah.
Talking about establishing Islam, and I think that's our jihad, to be honest. For us Muslims living in the West,
yes,
our jihad is to establish the deen of Allah through all means necessary.
And in that long-range process of making America Muslim, all of America Muslim.
All of America Muslim. All right, so this is called, this is Hijra. It's a jihad by overtaking people, moving there, and gradually, there's like stages of it where they move there first, they keep their heads down. But as soon as they populate to a certain point, they start complaining and acting like they're the victims and demanding rights. This has been happening for centuries. It's really, they've got it all planned out. And so then as soon as they outpopulate the native population, that's when they start implementing Sharia, which is, Sharia is everything. Sharia is banking. Sharia is clothing. Sharia is, it's everything in your life. It's the law. And by the way, I need to make clear, Islam is not a religion. They say it is. It's a political system. It is a political system that they force on you. And this is how they take power. So I want to read to you, I'm going to want you to hear another clip. This is Viktor Orban from Hungary describing the same thing. Now, the Hungarians have, they've closed their borders. They did that a long time ago. And actually, Germany is now kicking out the Islamic young, not young anymore, the young men that they allowed to just invade their country. I don't know how they're handling that. And there's some other countries that are doing that, but I'm not sure which ones, and I don't want to say. I know Germany for a fact. Now, this is Viktor Orban from Hungary, clip four.
The migration issue is so complicated. Legally, it's very simple, you know. To cross the border line without a permission is a crime. Full point, it's over. The problem is that migration is a concept of changing the society as such.
Yeah.
It's a kind of replacement of the original native-born voters with somebody else. And this is, you know, without being involved into any conspiracy theory, this is a well-detailed plan of the left.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, okay, my understanding of the history is probably not as sophisticated as yours, but if I understand correctly, the last 150 years of the European, including UK anyway, the European politics, it's about a competition of two tribes. One is those who think that we should stay in the traditional frame and value system of Europe as it was. Nation, freedom, Christianity, that's all.
Yeah, so that's what Victor's done. He's had a lot of criticism from closing the borders. And again, it's been that way for a couple of years, and they just don't have any problems there. But we didn't do that, did we? No, we didn't do that. We thought they'd bring more voters into the Republican Party. Yeah, and when we saw that they were dangerous, we looked the other way. And they refused to listen. I can't even tell you. I don't want to name names. But we have presented evidence to Republican leaders and had them just label us as radical, out of touch, just as though they were the SPLC, and just getting angry and defending Muslims that they knew. I saw in one conservative meeting I used to go to every week, and again, I don't want to name names. I've trashed enough people. But this is what happened. We had a Muslim, I can't recall his name. He used to come every week. He was had been brought into the Republican Party, and they just defended him as though their life depended on it. And then we found a video of him saying, "We love death more than they love life." This Muslim Republican who was, you know, so loved and adored by Republican leaders. And we saw that video. We showed them the video. It didn't matter. They accused us of mistreating him, of being Islamophobic. This is how bad it was 20 years ago. So I'm going to continue with this. And the next thing I'm going to do is talk about Texas, because that's where that is the focus for much of the Islamic takeover in this country. And we'll do that right after this.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
There are babies in their mother's wombs who need our help right now. And as the year comes to a close, your tax-deductible donation can be the difference between life and death. Would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your gift of $5, $10, or $15,000 will be used to save countless babies for years to come. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. And of course, Preborn uses their money in lots of ways. Not only help the moms, help the babies, they provide supplies, they give Christian counseling to the mothers, to the dads if they're involved. They do so many things. They give that a post-abortion pill, that anecdote or response to it. It only works if you come to them after you take the first pill. I have to be clear, even in just mentioning this in passing. But they can stop some of the choices these women have made when they've changed their mind after that first pill. So they do so many different things, and I just wanted you to be aware of those. So go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy, and make your most generous year-end donation to Preborn.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
The state of Texas has banned so-called Sharia cities after Governor Abbott signed House Bill 4211 in McKinney. Lawmakers passed it to specifically target Epic City, a planned mixed-use development near the town of Josephine. The governor claims anyone who bought a lot in Epic City would be required to follow Sharia law, making it a Muslims-only neighborhood. But an attorney says Abbott is lying and singling out Epic City. He says while it does include a mosque, the clinics, shops, apartments, and 1,000 homes are open to anyone, consistent with Texas law. Now, the Justice Department officially closed its investigation into Epic City this summer, and right now it's not clear if this law prevents the project from moving forward.
That's WFAA, and I guess in Texas, and of course, taking the side of the Islamists, thinking he's being, you know, defending people. If you know this, the Islamophobia was what the Islamists did was they borrowed the phrase homophobic, and they borrowed the phrase of sort of the language of the civil rights era to present themselves as victims, and then create a new phobia. And they were masterful. They are masterful propagandists. And so I think this gentleman, the reporter, must feel he's doing something good to help protect these poor Muslims who are trying to build this city, epic city in Texas. And then the justice has closed their investigation. Justice Department, that really upsets me too. How could they do that? Anyway, so there's another thing to be concerned about. Now, this next report gives a little bit more detail. Sharia law, by the way, is the, if you want to point to something, it's Sharia law that makes Islam completely incompatible with the West. They will never, ever bend the knee to our Constitution or our laws because they adhere to Sharia. And they have Sharia banks in the United States and other countries around the world. It's the banking. And the banking's important because they give their money to terrorist organizations. It's like our tithe that goes to the church. Well, their tithe, it's not 10%, but they give money through Sharia banking to terrorist organizations, and they are required to do that, meaning Muslims. And, of course, there's a lot of other things. It's all the behavior things. It's women not leaving the house, women covering their face all the time. Men have all the rights. Women are subject to can be killed by their husbands or beaten. They have no rights at all. They call them honor killings. So I remember once there was a gentleman who was a Muslim who bought a radio station in the Northeast. This has been probably a decade or two ago, maybe 15 years. And he looked so sophisticated and so Western. I've seen pictures of him. His wife was beautiful. But guess what this man who owned the radio station and was so respected member of the community did? He got mad at his wife and beheaded her. So that's Sharia, folks. That's Sharia law. So let's listen to a little bit more detail about what's going to happen or what's happening in Texas. My understanding is that Texas has more Muslims proportionately population than any other state. And before I play this clip, let me just say that this was by design. When Barack Obama was in office, he did so much damage. I know that's not a shock to you. For one thing, he replaced Christian chaplains in the military with Muslim imams. And that is when chaplains, the ones that survived, could not pray in the name of Jesus. They couldn't speak against gay marriage. And that was just part of it. Also, in the issue of immigration, Barack Obama brought in tons of immigrants from Muslim countries, Syrian especially, as I recall, and he relocated them in red areas. Nashville, Tennessee was a target. Dallas, Texas was a target. There were little towns like out, I can't remember, maybe Utah, places like that, where they would send a ton of Muslims, which these are like small town values folks. And it was like mean. It was purposeful. And of course, the attention was to turn the will, bend the will of the people in those states, either by changing their minds or by force. And so that's what's happened. And in Texas, they have multiplied and multiplied until I don't know what Texas is going to do, but they're trying to fight back right now. So let's listen to this clip. This is clip 8.
As a Muslim, Ayan Moladina says he sees Islamophobia every day.
People look at me differently and people treat me differently because of the background that I have.
He says anti-Muslim rhetoric surged after the 9/11 attacks and has risen in recent years because of the Israel-Hamas war.
We are hardworking members of society, but we're treated differently just because of our faith.
This week, Governor Greg Abbott declared the Muslim Brotherhood and the Council on American-Islamic Relations as foreign terrorist organizations. CARE is one of the nation's largest Muslim advocacy and civil rights groups. The governor says the groups have supported terror groups like Hamas and want to forcibly impose Sharia law, accusations CARE says have no basis in fact. In an interview with Fox News, Abbott said the groups are subverting Texas laws through harassment, intimidation, and violence.
The fact of the matter is there are people associated with CARE who pose a serious danger.
The governor's move bars the groups and those associated with them from purchasing or acquiring land. CARE has filed a lawsuit against Abbott and Attorney General Ken Paxton, alleging the proclamation is defamatory, has no basis in fact, and attempts to punish political speech. The civil rights group says it has consistently condemned all forms of unjust violence. It comes as Governor Abbott runs for a fourth term in office and amid a flare-up over the proposed development of an Islamic community.
All right, KVUE, ever heard of taqiyya? Ever heard of taqiyya? For a Muslim, taqiyya means you can lie to an infidel. An infidel is a non-Muslim. It's okay. In fact, you should lie to an infidel. You shouldn't tell the truth. You can deceive them. You can say anything you want, but you're not supposed to lie to another Muslim. So that's taqiyya. Like, what did they say? Oh, no, the SPLC says, we know we defend people. We're a civil rights organization. I just wonder if they're going to use the Holy Land Foundation exploratory memorandum as part of their proof that maybe it's not what it seems, that the Muslim Brotherhood actually does want to destroy our miserable house from within, as they stated so eloquently in their manifesto, which the FBI found in a basement by accident after, it's a really interesting story. There was a woman taking a picture of a bridge. I can't remember. It's in Northern Virginia. And someone got suspicious of this, followed the woman, and they found the headquarters of the Muslim Brotherhood. And that's how they found their manifesto and all their information. And that's why we know what we know. But now we don't know it anymore. We're just decided to become stupid. And so here is Governor Abbott trying to declare the Muslim Brotherhood and CARE, which are the same thing. CARE is the PR arm of the Muslim Brotherhood, as foreign terrorist organizations, which he did do. And now there's another backlash. And then finally, on that issue, this tells us a little bit more about what Governor Abbott has done. 8A.
In September, Abbott signed a bill into law that bans property developments that he calls Sharia compounds. There are no indications that the organizers of Epic City in North Texas plan to operate under Sharia law. In a statement signed by more than two dozen Democratic state lawmakers, including two who are Muslim, State Representatives Salman Bojani and Suleiman Lalani, they write, any group that threatens the safety of Texans should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. But the governor's proclamation singles out Muslim Texans for intimidation and harassment and spreads far-fetched conspiracy theories about Muslim civic institutions. Muslims like Mullah Dina fear the rhetoric and actions won't just spread Islamophobia, but will put a target on their back.
I think at a time like this, it's even more important that we understand that we are not the enemies within.
Really? Really? You know, well, earlier when he made his statement, he was talking about after 9/11, we've been treated badly. Well, how about something like this? We feel so deeply regretful about 9/11, and we personally didn't have anything to do with that, and we apologize for our Muslim brothers who created or perpetrated such a heinous act on our homeland. We hate that, and so we just want you to know we are loyal Americans, and we don't practice Sharia. We embrace your constitution, et cetera, et cetera. How about that? But no, no, it's your fault. You should never respond to 9/11. When you saw an act of war perpetrated on us and 3,000 Americans killed, you should have no response at all. Just be quiet. Sit down. You're not allowed to get angry. You're not allowed to respond. And that's really what they are saying. And, of course, he makes this case, this reporter for KVUE, that, well, two dozen Democratic lawmakers, including two Muslims, have denied those charges that they're going to use Sharia law in this a city. Anybody ever heard of taqiyya? Well, yes, I believe you have because I just talked about it. So it's okay to lie to an infidel. Well, Governor Abbott has his hands full. I know they've got a real battle down there in Texas, and I hope they can win this battle. So President Trump is now, of course, doing a lot of things, including he is stopping immigration or visas from countries where we're concerned. In fact, President Trump, of course, on Air Force One, talked about the fact that he's going to pause for asylum seekers, and he's doing more than that, too. But let's hear this interaction with him and a reporter. This is clip three.
Plan to pause asylum into the U.S.
I think a long time.
Can you give any kind of time?
What's a long time? We don't want those people. We have enough problems. We don't want those people.
Is that a year, 2 years?
No time limit. But it could be a long time.
You said that
we don't want those people. Do you understand that?
I understand.
You understand it?
I understand.
Who are you with?
I'm with News Nation. Sir.
Okay.
My name's Libby Dean.
News Nation. Great, great.
Thank you.
Let me just tell you something. We don't want those people. Does that make sense? You know why we don't want them? because many of them are no good and they shouldn't be in our country.
What do you mean by those people? Can you clarify?
The people from different countries that are not friendly to us and countries that are out of control themselves. Countries like Somalia that have virtually no government, no military, no police. All they do is go around killing each other. Then they come into our country and tell us how to run our country. We don't want them.
How many countries, roughly, would you put on that list?
She said how many
countries, would you put on that list?
Well, I guess we gave you 19, right? Okay. There's probably more than that.
Is that what you mean when you mean third world countries, those 19?
No, that, I don't think they're all third world, but in many cases they are third world. They're not good countries. They're very crime-ridden countries. They're countries that don't do a good job. They're countries that don't register from the standpoint of success. And we frankly don't need their people coming into our country telling us what to do.
When you talk about denaturalization.
I'm talking about like Somalia, where you have a congressman goes around telling everybody about our constitution, and yet she supposedly came into our country by marrying her brother.
Okay, so that must be Ilhan Omar. It is Ilhan Omar. You know what? Here's the thing. Do you hear how hostile the press is and how upset they are, how they're implying that there's something wrong with him trying to get rid of, like, terrorists inside of the country? Yesterday when Caroline Leavitt had a press conference, the reporters asked a million questions, like one after another, on the attack on that Venezuelan drug-running boat that was, again, obliterated. And then they did a second strike on the same boat. And so they were asking if this second strike, were there survivors? And isn't it against military law to kill survivors if they, you know, if they've already been hit once and they've survived, isn't this against the law? And I could talk about that for a second. I just really, so when we were in World War II, if a German U-boat, we shot them and there were some survivors and they're Nazis, do you think it's clean like that in war? And we're in a war against these drug runners because of they're bringing drugs in that are killing hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Americans, mostly young people. Doesn't that make anybody mad? But no, the press is asking about these poor, you know, drug runners who may have survived, and I don't know if they did. That's just their narrative. They're so concerned about that, they keep pressing. Well, what about the, isn't that a violation of, but you know what they did not ask? Not a single reporter in that press conference said anything or had any questions about Andrew Wolf or Sarah Bergstrom or Ramanula Lakanwal. They didn't ask anything about that. They didn't want to know. They're more concerned about Lakanwal and his health and the terrorists who may have survived that first, or the drug runners who may have survived that first boat, than they are about these American National Guard that have been fatally wounded, one of them. All I can say is, friends, keep your head on straight. As Christians, stay in the Word. Stay close to the Lord, because we're entering a time of more confusion than ever between AI, fake images, bad information. And I'm finding, I mentioned this to you before, when I'm looking for something, I have more trouble finding things that I know exist, but I don't have them at my fingertip. I rely on my search. And it's very hard to find some things right now. So I just can't emphasize how important it is for you to identify a source that you can trust. You know someone that you can trust in media. I'm hoping that I'm one of those persons, but I'm still bringing you the truth as best I can, but I'm not talking to you every day, and there's a lot more news I never get to. So just, you know, American Family Radio, of course, is a great source of good information that you can trust. And so I just want to say, this is dangerous times, but don't be afraid. There's nothing about any of this that surprises God. I always think about, you know, that verse, I think it's in Psalms, where man makes his plans and God sits in the heavens and laughs. He laughs. Man makes all his plans. The nations rage against him and God laughs. Yeah, so we got some raging going on here, especially against him. But Good luck with raging against God. That's all I can say. So with that in mind, don't be discouraged. Just be vigilant. And that's about all I have to say today. Don't forget Preborn, because we want to encourage you to support them as they do such great things. And, of course, they support this show, too. So we have a number of reasons to encourage you. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Make your most generous donation. Well, thank you so much, as always, for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.